I want to go.
You can't go. You're the rector, you're not in the military, and you have a half-grown arm.
MacRobert had said that 20 times before, with the usual effect people had when trying to talk Grace Vata out of what she wanted to do. None.
And you could very well get Kai killed.
How?
No one is going to ignore what the Rector of Defense says, but you have no more experience fighting a space battle than I have making fruitcakes. I know you. You can no more stay in your cabin and keep your mouth shut than you could knock me out with your short arm.
I could try.
Grace, listen this time. I'm not playing protect the sweet old lady. I'm not treating you like a child or a fragile flower of womanhood. I am treating you the way I would treat any fellow professional who wanted to be part of a mission. You are not qualified. You are not capable. You need to stay here and be sure we get the support the fleet needs. And incidentally, ensure that any more of Turek's agents hiding out are found and eliminated. What if Turek decides to make a side trip to wipe out Kai's homeworld?
But you're going.
I'm going because Slaughter Key needs a military person who has a direct connection to Kai and knows she's alive. Someone who she'll recognize and hopefully trust. Our ambassador at Cascadia can't do that. The privateer captains and their military advisors can't do that because Space Force won't necessarily trust them. I'm the one person who can do that.
Oh, you get all the fun. I need some compensation for all the work I put in getting those ships loose and committed to this joint operation.
Well, I'm leaving in 4 hours. Let's get started on that compensation.
8 hours later, settling into his compartment aboard Mandan Reef, one of the heavy cruisers, MacRobert remembered his own first cruise on Paleologus, commanded by the man who was now commandant of the Academy. Instead of a first shift slot in the crowded crew quarters between missile tubes 5 and 6, now he had a small cabin to himself as the Rector's personal assistant and liaison to the Allied fleet. He had no shipboard duties. He would not be scrubbing latrines to a mirror shine or swabbing the environmental section deck when a culture leaked or washing dishes. And he had no stripes. He wore civilian attire, which felt completely alien aboard ship.
Master Sergeant?
That was a junior enlisted, a mere skinny with the narrow band around the cuff of his shirt and Fenton on his name tag.
Yes.
The youngster almost jumped backward.
I don't bite.
The first officer wanted me to invite you to the bridge, sir.
He was neither a sir nor any longer a Master Sergeant, but the youngster was doing his best to be polite and was probably scared out of any wits he had ever possessed. MacRobert closed the case he'd been unpacking and stowed it, latching the cabinet properly.
Coming.
All the way up ship, he met men and women who knew who he was. Some of them he recognized. Officers he'd harassed and guided when they were cadets. Other enlisted who'd been assigned to Space Force Academy while he was there. Nobody called him Sir MacRobert here, as some now did in government offices. He was apparently still a master sergeant in the eyes of Space Force personnel. Mandan Reef's first officer was Lieutenant Commander Dale. MacRobert remembered him as a brash young man who had required some firm handling, but turned out well in the top fifth of his class.
Captain's in with the Admiral. Suggested I show you the bridge, Master Sergeant. It's been a while.
MacRobert glanced around.
Oh, that it has, Commander. You've been with Mandy long?
1.5 years. Commander Saracen brought me along from Firewort.
Dale introduced MacRobert to the rest of the bridge crew.
Captain said you'd be welcome up here any time, except, of course, in combat.
I'll try not to wear out my welcome, Commander.
And as it... I guess you're a civilian, officially. You're welcome to mess with either officers or enlisted.
I haven't been an official civilian that long, Commander. If it won't offend anyone, I'd rather leave the officers to their wardroom and mess and me where I'm comfortable.
Master Sergeant, I have the feeling you are comfortable anywhere from the Pink Palace on down. But suit yourself. Captain said to ask.
MacRobert made it back to his quarters, finished his interrupted unpacking, and wondered how Grace was doing. He had gotten used to being her counterweight, and her being his. A relationship more of working partners than anything else, though the intervals of pleasure were pleasurable. He had arranged additional security for her. She was as accurate with her weaponry as ever. But until that arm was full grown and up to strength, he still worried. They'd found four more of Turek's people. He doubted that was all. He ate his first meal aboard at a table of senior NCOs, most of whom he knew. They shared stories of past cruises and adventures. Mandan Reef, steady as the planet itself by feel, gave no sense of motion along any axis. McRobert hadn't been in space, other than brief trips to Slaughter Key's orbital stations, in several years. He hadn't been aboard one of the heavy cruisers in a decade, at least. The first days of the trip were unremarkable. Admiral Padjan asked him for his analysis of the effect on tactics of onboard Ansibles, and McRobert spent two work shifts writing it out, revising it, then revising it again. He presented his data cubes, text and visuals, to the Admiral's staff, and went back to his own pursuits for another 4 days. With no assigned duties, he used the time in the gym and onboard weapons range, as well as chatting with enlisted personnel, all of them openly curious about his life after retirement, and the Slaughter Key commander of a new joint force who had once been a Space Force cadet. They wanted to hear marvels, he knew. They wanted to hear that she was the smartest, the bravest, the best of all he'd known, his favorite, someone worth trusting, someone who would not waste their lives doing something stupid. This far from grace, he could admit, to himself, that Kai had not been his favorite of all the cadets he'd known. Very good, yes. Everything her marks and evaluations promised. But he had pegged her as too upright, too humorless, too conventional a product of a merchant family. His favorite of all time had been a witty Raquel, an admiral's son who escaped trouble by the skin of his teeth time after time, and still topped the charts. Nassim had died 15 years before, no fault of his own, when his ship, exploring a new route, had down-jumped into a large mass. Nassim would not have fallen for the Miznari's sob story. He had political sense from the first day. But then, Kai had never jumped blind and run into a rock. What really irked McRobert about Kai, he had to admit, was that he had not seen all her potential when she was right there under his eye. He had seen the dedication, the courage, the integrity, but he'd missed the killer Grace had seen. He hadn't even looked for it in a merchant's daughter. He'd thought of the letter of marque more as a way of keeping contact with someone who might be able to supply useful intelligence, who had enough military training to know what might be worth sharing, than as taking the leash off a born combat commander. He told the enlisted men and women most of what they wanted to hear. It couldn't hurt. And when 2 days from downjump, the admiral and staff called him in to ask much the same thing, he told them, too.
You've got her dossier, Admiral. You know what the commandant thought of her. She had a lock on being honor graduate until then.
She fell for some young man.
No, sir. She was his assigned mentor. She believed he was in distress, and she tried to find him appropriate religious counsel. She should have come to me or to one of the instructors, yes, but she did not see it as a political problem, and she did not think approaching a religious person, a cleric, would cause the trouble it did cause.
But if she makes mistakes like that, how can we be sure?
Clearly, orders to put his squadrons under the command of someone he'd never met, someone who was not even an academy graduate, were fraying in the admiral's memory. McRobert put on his most familiar persona, the senior NCO, who, perfectly respectful, nonetheless steers his seniors around the potholes they are unable or unwilling to see.
Sir, if she still made mistakes like that, she wouldn't be alive. Cadets, you know, they do make mistakes. Sometimes serious ones. Sometimes in class, sometimes in barracks, sometimes on the drill field.
Admiral Padjan acquired a faint flush. McRobert ignored it. They both knew what Padjan's mistake had been, and he hadn't repeated it, which was the point.
That's how they learn.
And you think she's really competent to command large forces in combat? A mixed force like this?
She's the only person on our side who's done it, and she survived. So it's the Rector's judgment that she's capable, and I concur.
The Rector is her relative. That suggests her judgment might be less than impartial.
The Rector is a combat veteran herself.
A long time ago. All right, I take your point. The Rector isn't just a political appointee. Kai Vata isn't just an impressionable girl. I hope you're right.
MacRobert hoped so, too.
Let's get to the details. I've looked over what you supplied, and what little information we've had direct from Admiral Vata. I've had some thoughts I'd like to discuss with all of you.
Pajan glanced around the compartment. MacRobert was relieved that Pajan finally used Kai's rank. Maybe that particular hurdle was passed.
If there is time to train together, of course we will do that. But the Moscow and Moray governments both think an attack will come soon, possibly immediately on our arrival, or, if we are unlucky, before we arrive. We must have plans in place for all those, in case we do not get to talk to Admiral Vata before we're engaged.
Does she know we're coming?
We're not sure.
I see. So she might shoot us herself.
She knew negotiations were ongoing. I wouldn't expect her to fire at anything with a Slaughter Key beacon ID.
She was sure her relative would come through, eh?
MacRobert put on his bland look again.
In my experience, Captain, the Rector is uncommonly effective at getting done what she thinks needs doing.
True. She got us a full loadout of missiles and a new set of coils for Number 4 faster than I'd ever seen supply hustle. I like that kind of effectiveness.
It was with great difficulty I dissuaded her from coming along.
MacRobert enjoyed the horrified looks that resulted.
She is, after all, a war veteran, as she reminded me, and she felt that her presence might be helpful in dealing with other governments.
Grace's reputation had not lessened in her time at the head of the Defense Department. No one thought of her as a potential diplomat.
But the President wouldn't have let...
Captain Sarasthan slowly closed his mouth. Clearly, all remembered what had happened to the former president, and the rumors about Grace at that time.
And you changed her mind?
In a manner of speaking. She's very dedicated to the welfare and safety of Slaughter Key, and she finally saw that her place was there, guarding the rear, as it were. I pity the pirate who tries to get past her.
Penelope Dunbarger, she had taken back her maiden name for business use and insisted that the media use it, looked perfectly at ease in the chair placed for her by a solicitous host on the main news program. Rafe could hardly believe this was happening. She had left the building not by the underground route he would have recommended, but by the front entrance, smiling and waving at the astonished police and news reporters as if she were a vid star. After disappearing into a crowd of uniforms and cameras, she had reemerged and entered the rear door of a long, sleek vehicle that looked suspiciously like his own, and he had heard nothing from her for hours. 5 minutes before, Gary had walked into his office and turned on the main screen without comment. Now, here she was, about to be the first news item interview by all appearances.
You've made extraordinary accusations, Sarah Dunbarger. You must realize that defending your brother, a known criminal, by attacking a senior government official could be interpreted as more family loyalty than anything else.
Penny patted the man's arm. He looked startled.
Come now, Stan. Everyone knows that sisters know brothers' faults. We aren't dazzled by them. We've seen them with their pants down. Literally, when they were knobby-kneed little boys.
She's good.
You've got people...
Of course. She's covered. She said to get back here and make sure you saw this. She said it's payback time.
Payback?
Rafe, I know you're having a bad day, and I'm truly sorry about Kai Vata. But with this one, you did something extraordinary. You may not be able to appreciate it now, but you should. You freed the genie from the bottle.
In other words, you're saying you're not blind to his faults.
Gracious, no. I'd be the first to tell you that Rafe snores so loud you can hear him 3 doors away.
I do not.
Doesn't matter. It makes you human. And you did snore in the dormitory back at that place about the time your voice was breaking.
You told her?
She asked for something harmless. Snoring is something innocent, like farting, only that's low class, and Snoring happens in the best-regulated families.
The host glanced at his notes, looking severe.
But when your brother was here before...
He was young and wild, yes.
He killed two men.
Saving my life. My family wanted to save me the trauma. A lot was hushed up that should not have been, because Rafe saved my life that night. Men broke in, killed the house staff, and were going to kill or abduct us.
Are you sure it's not just an excuse he made? Something he told you?
I wasn't a baby. I was in school. Tolver Junior Girls. I remember it very clearly indeed. The man had grabbed me out of bed, half smothered me in the duvet, and was carrying me away when Rafe shot him.
Playing him like a violin. Now she has me wondering how often she's played me.
But we obtained the official records, and it says Rafe, your brother, hit you.
When I saw the cook's body downstairs, I started screaming. I couldn't stop. Rafe slapped me so I would stop. I don't mind that. He hadn't done it before, and he never did it again.
So it's your contention that his killing those men was in self-defense?
Not contention. Fact. Completely self-defense.
Then why was he sent to the Gardner facility?
Lou Parmina. He told my parents where to send us for post-trauma therapy, and then got the therapist to say that Rafe was dangerous. I don't think he'd ever have done those other things he did if he hadn't been locked up there.
Wouldn't have had the contacts to get her out if I hadn't. Not that I appreciated that at the time.
She's doing a perfect job. I could use someone like that in my organization.
She wants my job, Gary, not yours. Luckily for you.
The interview went on. The interviewer doing his best to present Penny as the besotted little sister of a dastard. But Penny neither wavered nor lost her amiable composure.
What you have to understand is that I'm the one, not Rafe, who's been looking into the financial details of deals cut between individuals in ISC and the Nexus government. Rafe gave me a temporary job to keep me busy while I mourned my husband's death. He thought I would just sit there doing data entry.
She pulled out a data cube.
Instead, I found myself fascinated with the number of people who had their noses in the same money stream. The late Secretary Isaacs, for instance, had been taking in tens of thousands of credits a year. Money I can trace to Sir Parmina by way of the former enforcement chief at ISC. Money allocated by ISC's board of directors for maintenance of ISC's fleet, which, as you know, is a major component of the system defense, was going everywhere but the fleet.
The data cube glittered in the light as she rolled it in her fingers and the camera zoomed in. The news anchor stared at it avidly.
Do you have proof? Is that it?
Penny smiled at him, the fond smile of an indulgent mother for a rather backward child.
Of course I have proof. I'm not in the habit of making false accusations. This is your copy. And there are many more, of course. I had not had time to tell Rafe about all I found. He's had one crisis after another to deal with.
You've made some comments about Secretary Isaacs.
That he was involved in cheating the government, yes. And that he had reason to think that someone might be onto his misdeeds. And thus might well have considered a suicide that implicated my brother and ISC as a way out.
But your brother was there.
Of course he was. It helps to get the person you wish to frame at the right place at the right time, doesn't it?
Penny smiled at him, then nodded as if he'd agreed.
Isaac's secretary ushered my brother in and laid a packet of data cubes, just like that one, on his desk. Then he started fiddling with one of the cubes, the way you're doing.
The host dropped the cube, as if it were hot suddenly.
And collapsed. It would have been easy to put contact poison on the data cubes and have them, or one of them, ready in case of need.
Do you know if the cubes have been tested?
No. I did suggest that to the police, of course. They weren't aware that the cubes hadn't been there all along, that they had been brought in just when Rafe was meeting the secretary.
It could mean that Secretary Isaacs was murdered by someone else, even if the cubes are found and are contaminated. That doesn't mean he committed suicide.
The host took a quick glance at his notes.
Now, there have been suggestions that the incident in which your husband was killed and your parents were abducted was in fact organized by your brother in league with Lou Parmina to disable your father, and then, by apparently rescuing you, be unable to take over ISC. Lou Parmina, the only person who might incriminate your brother, is conveniently dead at his hand, without trial for his alleged crimes.
Penny was smiling, but now it was a cold smile.
In a word, no. It was Lou Parmina who told my parents what therapist to send Rafe and me to after the home invasion. It was Lou Parmina who ingratiated himself with our father, became his right-hand man, and, to prevent being displaced by my brother Rafe, engineered his commitment to the Gardner facility. It was Lou Parmina who doled out his allowance, introduced him to prostitutes, encouraged his vices.
Do you have any proof?
Yes. But that proof is not with me today. I was at work, as you know, and had available only those matters pertaining to ISC government relations. I will, of course, be glad to provide it.
The host glanced with some desperation to the side.
Begging for the producer to signal a break. But they're all too interested.
But there's a far more serious problem. You recall I said that Parmina had squandered on bribes money meant to keep ISC's fleets in repair? Well, there's imminent threat. And Rafe needs to talk to the Premier. But the Premier won't talk to him because he believes what he was told, that Rafe killed Secretary Isaacs.
The host jerked his head around to gape at Penny.
That's not...
So I wanted to make this public appeal. Rafe didn't kill the Secretary, but he might be able to help save us all if he gets to talk to the Premier and they work together. If he's under arrest or the Premier won't listen to him, he can't. And he has a pretty good record of pulling off rescues, as I should know. And we need to give him a chance to do his best for all of us. Thank you so much, Stan, for having me on your show.
You're welcome. Sarah Dunbarger. And I guess that's all of our time.
I give it less than a minute.
A minute to what?
The phone call from the Premier's office suggesting that you should come over there. Don't. Invite him here. Tell him there's data you can only access here, which is partly true, at least.
I don't think that...
Gary grinned and spread his hands.
I should have asked you to bet on it.
And you'd have won, if that's the Premier.
Premier on the line.
She's going to make a great CEO if she doesn't decide to go into politics.
Huh?
Penny, I'll take the call in here, Emil.
Gary followed Emil out. Rafe made sure the recorder was running before he picked up the headset. For this one, he wanted a reliable record.
Did you put her up to that?
No, this was all her idea.
She's younger than you.
She's a grown woman who's already told me she wants my job. I thought I was giving her busy work to take her mind off her losses, and she was burrowing into the archives learning the business.
She what?
You're not more surprised by this than I am. She walked out of here this morning without asking my permission, having told me to stay in my office and keep out of it, and the next thing I knew, she was on that news show.
She flabbergasted Stan. I've interviewed with him. He's not easy to shake. Are you sure this is the same Penny I remember swimming with my younger children? Sweet little Penny?
This is sweet little Penny grown up. The kind of trauma she's been through crumbles some people, but apparently not her.
She's on her way over here to meet with me. If she convinces me that she's really behind this, I'll get you out of your pickle and we'll talk.
Bring her back over with you. I have data. ISC data you need to see.
Concerning?
Concerning the mess we're in, militarily and financially.
Well, you know I'll have to bring my own security.
Of course.
They tell me your sister's car is almost here. Do you suppose her driver would know how to disappear the way you did this morning?
I have no idea. But it would be best for everyone if... Should Penny satisfy you, you either came with her to the main entrance or came in your own car the same way. There's been far too much secrecy. We need to be seen as honest men.
All right, then. If I come, that's what we'll do. Open and above board. And I've already instructed the investigators to look for those data cubes and examine the entire executive floor at defense. If it was murder, we need to find out who did it and why. Suicide? Well, I'm sorry for the family.
Rafe sat and squeezed his eyes shut, trying to think what he should say, do, plan to have ready. He was usually the one driving events, pushing the pace, but now he felt sluggish, tumbled in a rushing stream. He opened his eyes and realized that, sluggish or not, his reflexes still worked. He had his Rossi Smith out and his other hand on the alarm button. Emil was ushering in a woman with a meal cart. The food Emil had mentioned before.
I did food.
So you did. Smells good. Join me, you and Gary both?
As he'd expected, there was enough for all of them. They moved into the office suite's small dining room. The attendant unfolded the meal cart's several serving areas, set places at the table, and withdrew at Rafe's nod.
So, are you off the hook?
Probably Penny's going over there to talk to him in person. Assuming she succeeds, and after that performance I imagine she will, he'll be coming here.
Rafe stared at the food cart. He'd skipped breakfast. He knew he should eat.
Soup.
Rafe filled a bowl with soup and sat down.
Some CEO I am. Can't even decide what to eat.
If the Premier's coming here for a briefing, we'll need the big briefing room. I'll call down, make sure it's clear, have a security sweep.
Emil left the room, a stuffed roll in hand.
He wasn't that smart when you took over. What about him and Penny?
Nothing, so far as I know. But then I'm beginning to wonder how much I know.
The beginning of wisdom. Wisdom's fine, as long as it doesn't slow your gun hand.
So, are you coaching Penny in marksmanship?
Doesn't need much coaching. Didn't know that, did you?
No.
Rafe was surprised how much even a few spoonfuls of soup had revived him. He took a slice of roast lamb and some potatoes onto his plate.
Her husband had started her on it. Your parents didn't. He gave her a lady's pistol, but the thugs took it. It was in her purse across the room. If you really want to get on her good side, Rafe, you'll take her shopping and get her what she needs. She's been using one of the range loaners.
I still find this difficult. She's my little sister, damn it. Penny, with a weapon.
We'll be safer. Your admiral carried a gun.
Didn't keep her alive.
Are you sure she's...
I don't want to be sure. But that's all the evidence I have.
Rafe's skull phone pinged. He turned it on and activated the visual and recording.
It's me, Rafe. I'm at the president's.
I'm eating lunch. I missed breakfast.
I'm bringing the Premier over, unless you're going to need the car this afternoon, or he can bring his own.
I've got enough work to keep me here well into the evening, Penny. By all means, use our car.
He's asked me to lunch first, though. I'm thinking we'll be an hour, maybe two. I know it's urgent, but is that all right?
Rafe wanted to say more than he could possibly fit into this kind of conversation.
Penny, it's fine. But you don't need to ask me. Your judgment is good enough.
It's with lemon lime pie. And he says he has the same cook as before back at their house. I remember that pie.
And she was being the perfect guest, attaching all those memory hooks to the sweet girl Penny the Premier remembered splashing in the pool.
Enjoy it. I hope the rest is as good.
Baked fish, stuffed with crab and shrimp. I'm sure it will be. See you after lunch.
Emil came back in as Penny's call ended.
Are you going to want archival material? And when do you think they'll arrive?
My brilliant sister got herself invited to lunch over there, ensuring that we have a couple of hours. As soon as I finish, I'll tell you what I think we need. Gary, the Premier will arrive with his own security. Make sure we have tags ready. Code locked to his so they can't roam around. Emil, make sure we have the VIP reception team rested and fed and ready to go.
Rafe was hungry again, to his own surprise. He eyed the rest of the offerings on the cart and decided to skip dessert. It would not hurt him to look lean and hungry. Kai rode out the down jump of Vanguard 2 in the CCC, along with its specialists and her senior staff. The days in FTL flight had been nerve-wracking, with questions about what Turek was doing, whether Space Force Fleet had left Slaughter Key yet, whether the Nexus government had come to its senses and asked its former allies for help. It was a relief to have the waiting over. The beacons of the forward scouts showed up almost immediately, right where they should have been. Kai knew that an automatic arrival message had been shot to the Moray government as soon as their onboard unit detected normal space conditions again. Other than that, down-jump turbulence obscured scan briefly, then cleared.
There's ransom and a few light hour scan lag, some unidentified...
Good thing I warned him we'd be coming in with some velocity on us. We could have run right over him.
Kai watched her own heads-up display. As planned, their formation executed a maneuver to clear space for ships following. She watched the ship icon seem to skid along the surface of her display.
Contact with ransom.
Transfer.
Teddy Ransom's face came up on the screen, and he did not look nearly as happy as she expected.
They're gone.
Gone?
Went into FTL 8 hours ago, about. Once I located them and contacted you, I shifted around to find a better vantage point that wouldn't be in your way if you followed the same path. A lot of comm chatter, ships moving about. There's some kind of installation there, but I didn't dare close in, just in case. A couple of days ago, standard, good-sized ship arrived. Either no weapons, or weapons locked down. I'm guessing supplies, because there was a cloud of little stuff zipping back and forth. And when that ended, there was a long transmission. I copied it for you. And then they moved into formations and boosted for jump.
Did all the ships leave? We're picking up some presence, but several hours lag out.
No, there are still a few, maybe 10 or 20. I haven't picked up any chatter, and none of these have hot weapons. I'll send you a scan history.
A light came on the data-only channel. Did you get an exit vector? It might help identify Turek's destination, though Kai felt she knew. It had to be Nexus.
Better than that. They're headed for Nexus, and they're planning an 8-day hop. Couldn't understand a lot, but I understood that much. I did transmit to Moray's government, and they may have passed it on to the others.
How many?
I don't have an exact count, but somewhere over 300.
300?
Yes. It's a mixed lot. The Moray ships he got are the biggest. But from somewhere, he's got 72 of the same size as the Bisnet cruisers, though not all the same design. He must have raided other systems.
No doubt. Now send us what data you have. 300. More than 300. More than 300 anything was far more than she had. Any word from Captain Baskerville?
I'm afraid he may have had a malfunction in FTL flight, or something went wrong on downjump.
That was the most likely answer, Kai knew. I hope he turns up. But given the hazards on that route, I'm afraid you're right. On scan, two of the icons moved, followed by short, broad acceleration cones. Low boost. Did you pick up any of his stealthed observers?
No. I was trying not to be noticed myself.
Contact Captain Yamini, see if he's seen anything. Her senior communications tech nodded, but even as she reached for the controls, Yamini called in.
Two watchdogs, system relative coordinates as follows.
Icons came up on the screen, translated from the coordinates he sent.
They just told their base you were here and to lure you in. They've got fixed emplacements in something. Big rocks, I guess.
Let's not take that bait. Captain Ransom, you'll be part of the forward scout unit. You should be receiving updated navigational data. Move into position. There's no green route from here to Nexus. All ships but medium and heavy cruisers should be aware of the effects of the mapped hazards that may affect fleet formations and the downjump exit location. Be prepared to make immediate adjustments. All ships, remember orders per rest period prior to downjump. We expect to come into trouble. We need to be ready for it.
They found the pirate's base, and Nexus is definitely the target.
The Premier handed the hard copy of the message to Rafe. In the days since Isaac's death and Penny's intervention, the Premier had shown himself more competent than Rafe had expected, if not as swift in action as he'd hoped. He seemed more interested in finding out how Isaac's had died and investigating the connections between Parmina and various individuals in defense than in prodding the government to do anything about the inevitable invasion. The pirates might attack Cascadia instead. That was the argument. Now he looked two shades paler than usual.
The Moray government says the enemy had left a staging area 8 hours before their fleet arrived, but they had sent an advanced scout, somebody named Ransom, who located the base days ago. You know this person?
Teddy Ransom, yes. I met him on Cascadia Station. Flamboyant character, but capable.
Teddy Ransom had been glued to Kai Vada's side at that formal reception and dinner. Rafe was reasonably sure she wasn't falling for him, but it had been painful to watch, and now that she was gone forever, more painful to remember.
The Moray government waited to inform us until the fleet arrived and confirmed Ransom's report. Apparently, they weren't convinced he was reliable. So, we have 10 or 11 days less warning than we might have had.
We're fortunate they warned us at all. Did they say how many, or where they are?
Over 300, ranging from the new Moray-built heavy cruisers to armed converted merchanters. Estimated that about 20 of the ships are resupply, but they may be troop ships. And supposedly, only an 8-day FTL transit.
300?
Even at his most pessimistic, Rafe had never imagined Turek having that many ships. The fleet in Moray, even if it came directly to Nexus system, was hours behind,
and at most a third that size. And 8 days away. He had been lulled, he realized, by the same assumptions as the Premier. Moray was 20 days FTL. When 20 days had passed without an attack, he had imagined the pirates being still 20 days away. Or at least 10. Rafe thought of the time wasted in investigation, consultation, discussion. Days they could not get back now, when they needed them most.
You have notified the Moscow Confederation.
Of course. Moray had already told them, and I requested assistance. They reminded me that we had refused to ally with them in this matter and said the ships they could spare were with the fleet coming from Moray, at least until reinforcements from Slaughter Key arrive.
They're getting more privateers from Slaughter Key?
Space Force this time, apparently. I've tried to contact Slaughter Key's Rector of Defense, but I'm told she'll be unavailable for some hours. Their president says he would prefer to have the Rector communicate with me. I understand that's another Vata.
Grace Lane Vata. I heard a lot about her from the Vatas I met who knew her.
Is she likely to help us? Surely she'll understand the importance of Nexus.
She's said to be touchy, and as you may recall, both Secretary Isaacs and our ambassador said some harsh things about the Vata family and my connection with it. And since her niece, great-niece, I think it is, Kai Vata, was killed, I suspect she may be touchier than usual.
Oh, surely she wouldn't let that influence her, with so much at stake.
We can hope. Any luck with Mackenzie?
They have ships on the way, they said, but from the Mackenzie home base. And those ships are not equipped with onboard ansibles, any more than the ISC fleet or our home guard ships are. Do you think Turek had enough to equip his whole fleet?
Maybe. It's impossible to know. If not, he'll probably cluster his ships, no more than a half light sec distance between those without and one with the onboard. Otherwise, he has too much light lag for accurate control. He probably has already sent stealthed observer controller ships into our systems. You need to have someone go over the deep space scans very carefully.
Nothing unusual has come through the jump points. I did think of that.
They won't come in by the regular jump points.
Rafe wondered how someone could get to be Premier and not understand even that much about war.
I'll get our best people on this, too. They're going to be hard to find. Kai, Admiral Vata, told me how they operated in the box top incident. She didn't know how far in advance these ships were emplaced, but was sure they were there prior to the main attack. The stealth observers will definitely have their own ansibles and can serve as relay stations for conventional communications if necessary.
8 days. 300 of them. Do you think we have any chance?
Not if we sit here doing nothing. Let's get busy instead.
The Premier stood.
Right. This isn't really in my area of expertise.
The Premier's areas of expertise lay in posing for photographs, shaking hands, and behind-the-scenes arm-twisting of government opponents.
Nor mine. But we do have some competent military commanders, even if our resources are less than we could wish.
What about the civilian population? What can we do for the people out there?
Not a thing, really, Rafe knew. From the evidence of a few past wars, the civilians might be killed even if the home fleet won. All an enemy had to do was throw large rocks at a planet to cause catastrophic damage, and the larger beam weapons could deliver deadly force through atmosphere. But it would not do to say so.
Your emergency management personnel should know that. I'd hesitate to say. I need to get my people busy on looking for Turek's advanced ships, so if you'll excuse me...
Of course. Go ahead.
Rafe glanced up at the soft, blue sky as he headed for his car. A lovely spring day, the scent of new-mown grass and the first of the roses, the very fragrant old white rambler trained up one side of the Premier's residence, the fresh green of new leaves on the trees that edged the lawn, the low border of purple star-shaped flowers whose name he didn't know, a bird's call, the hum of distant traffic. It seemed unreal that somewhere out there, 300 hostile ships were coming to destroy all this. That this blue sky could be stained with fire and smoke, the grass blackened. But that was as real as this. It had happened elsewhere. It could happen here. If things went badly enough, not only Nexus, but all the systems that depended on Nexus could be destroyed. billions of people. Inside ISC, tense faces seemed to relax as he entered. Rafe seethed under his calm exterior. He was not a miracle worker. He could do nothing to stop what was coming. Rafe called enforcement, gave them the bad news, and told them to set up a search pattern for the stealth ships he expected were in place or would arrive.
And make sure you do full visual and instrumented inspections of all the system ansibles every 4 hours, with different teams.
Rafe had said this before, but like the Premier, they found it difficult to believe anyone really would attack Nexus. Now their expressions registered the shock they should have felt long before.
We're very likely to have infiltration by Turek's agents, possibly set in place years ago, ready to sabotage the system ansibles on his command or at a set time. You've got my information on the kinds of damage I found in other systems.
But we have 6 platforms. We can't cover them all on that schedule.
I'm releasing repair and maintenance teams to this mission, as we've discussed.
Rafe would have done that before, but the platforms had limited space and life support. They could not be triple crewed for long.
We must keep the platforms up and running. They're vulnerable to space-based physical attack, but the more likely danger is that Turek will use his moles just before or as the invasion fleet arrives. If we're cut off, well, you know what that means.
Denny Cuthan's replacement, Arturo Valencia, nodded.
So don't let us be cut off. You can have as many people from R&M as you need. It's better if they're dispersed anyway. You have priority for all ISC shuttle service until your people are in place. Let me know when you have an estimate of that time and then when they've arrived.
For the most distant platforms, that would take a minimum of 8 days. Probably not enough time, but he had to try.
Yes, sir.
Amel, please get Penny and other section heads except enforcement tipped in. I need to do a briefing. After this briefing, I'll do another for the board, so you might as well give them a heads up.
Right away.
On the screens in Rafe's office, faces began to appear. When they were all in place, Rafe turned his own video pickup on.
Most of you are aware that there has been a threat of hostile invasion of this system for some time. And most of you, if not all of you, know that our own ISC fleet is obsolete, badly maintained, and incapable of providing a viable defensive force. I have now been informed that an enemy fleet, a very large enemy fleet, is on its way here and expected to arrive in system in less than 8 standard days.
The faces on screen showed every shade of shock, fear, and horror that someone like Turek could hope for.
So far, these details have not been made public, but the Premier is planning to make an announcement within the next few hours. Our job, in this time of crisis, is to keep ISC equipment working. The better the communications, the better our chances. I have released all repair and maintenance personnel and all ISC-owned transport vessels to enforcement. They will transfer to our Ansible platforms and be ready to deal quickly with any problems that may arise. All ISC fleet vessels and their personnel have been deployed under the command of Jamie Driscoll, who has been in charge of upgrading the fleet since I discovered its deficiencies and authorized funding for this effort. Nexus's own space defense forces have been seconded to Admiral Driscoll as well. We are expecting reinforcements from other systems, but the exact timing of their arrival, as of the enemy's arrival, is not known. Questions?
Does Driscoll have any kind of plan?
That was the latest head of procurement.
I'm sure he does. However, neither you nor I have a need to know what it is.
The head of repair and maintenance, Minerva Grob, lit up a request to speak.
Do you anticipate a need for sudden generation of more power, either here at headquarters or on the Ansible platforms?
I don't know. Would that change your release of personnel to the Ansible platforms?
No, sir, but it might change how the teams are organized. Right now, and what enforcement asked for, is that personnel start moving to the shuttle fields and just load and go. First come, first taken, with the first shuttle heading for the most distant platform. But if you think the attack might target power source and power transfer, either here or aloft, then we should include a minimum of 5 specialists in power for each destination.
That's an excellent point. In the organization and procedures I've seen, enforcement would be in charge, with R&M folded in. But this is a unique situation, and I should have consulted you simultaneously. Amel, get Valencia in on this. We have a procedural problem.
Valencia's face came up, shifting one row sideways.
Sir?
Rafe explained the situation, assigned the 2 section heads to work it out between them, and asked if the others had any more questions. No one seemed to, but Penny stayed connected as the others left.
What about the others?
Who?
Mother and Dad. Should we tell them?
The last person Rafe wanted to tell about the coming crisis was his father. And if worse came to worst, there would be no safe place anyway.
I don't think so.
Now that I've made myself so very popular, I'm wondering what you want me to do. I can keep digging in the figures, of course. But if we're all going to be blown away, I'd rather not have my last memory be of a page in the account books.
Liaison. I need an ISC mouthpiece to Moscow Confederation, to Vada Enterprises, to Moray, and to our own government. If I do it, that's all I'll do. And I should be staying on top of ISC functions. But only if you're willing.
I can do that.
I'll tell them all... We'll tell them that you're speaking for me. I'll tell you what resources we have and don't have. You know most of it anyway, so just don't promise anything we can't deliver.
Right.
From that moment, the next days passed in a blur of activity. Rafe snatched a few hours sleep when he could, but spent every waking moment dealing with myriad large and small crises. From the failure of a supply ship to deliver enough food to one of the Ansible platforms, to the cook in the employees' dining hall, who suddenly went berserk and started throwing pans of hot food over the serving line. All the usual problems, and all the additional ones brought on by the stress of longer hours and the fear of invasion. Penny appeared on the news at least once a day to explain what ISC was doing, or why it wasn't doing what someone thought it should, and she handled all the foreign communications with the aplomb he now expected. He came into his office the third day to find her arguing with Stella Vada.
The entire production run is already sold out. We're at maximum. We have back orders. And we have an invasion now 2 days away. I believe our need is more pressing.
Rafe had warned her that Stella would not release any of the onboard Ansibles, but Penny must have decided to tackle the problem herself. He paused just inside the door, outside video pickup range, and watched.
Even if we released some, the shipping time is too long. They wouldn't arrive in time.
I'm willing to take that chance. Why aren't you?
Because I don't want them falling into Turek's hands, that's why. If your government hadn't refused to work with us, you'd have some. But it did, and the governments that agreed got them instead. It's not my fault that your government got its tail in a knot about Vadas.
Stella had the expression Rafe knew well, and for a moment he thought there might be a battle over family honor.
Oh, I know! And I shouldn't laugh, but really! That whole so-called chain of evidence about a Vada conspiracy, it's ridiculous! Rafe would have known if there'd been one. And for our government to keep him away from your cousin Kai...
Your government wasn't the only one.
What do you mean? Who else would care?
Stella sat perfectly still a moment. Rafe held his breath.
Sarah Dunbarger, your brother was never the right man for Kai.
Now it was Penny's turn to show anger. Rafe saw the flush on the back of her neck.
I hope you aren't saying what I think.
I told Rafe to stay away from her. Look, I knew Rafe years ago. You probably don't know this, but he was not a man who was... who did...
If you mean he was wild in his youth and had flings with young women, I know that. Everybody knows that. But that was Rafe then. That is not Rafe now, and Rafe now...
said he loved her, I know. But I don't believe he knows what that means. I'm not blaming him. I realize he had a horrible time, but she's... she was my cousin, and I didn't want her hurt.
Rafe edged along the wall to where he could just see Penny's profile. She looked as angry as she'd sounded. Time to intervene. He stepped into pickup range.
Sorry to interrupt, but there's a situation. Stella, do you know anything about those reinforcements from Slaughter Key? I've got questions from our commanders, and I was going to ask Penny to ask you...
All I know is that they're in FTL flight, their arrival time is uncertain, and Aunt Grace isn't willing to say any more this close to the blow-up we all expect. Rafe, if you heard what I said about you, I am sorry if it hurt your feelings.
She looked as beautiful as ever, but worn. Kai's death, he knew, must be affecting her even more than it had him.
I have more to worry about than my feelings. Please pass on to the Rector my concern that without a list of ship IDs, our people might shoot the wrong icons. We need some kind of recognition code.
I forwarded that when the fleet left Slaughter Key.
Rafe struggled through the chaos in his mind to remember what day that might have been.
I never got it. Sorry. When did you send it? I've got too many details.
I'll send it again. Now, of course you need that.
If we've got another traitor...
I sent it to your defense department.
Send it to me this time? We've had some problems, but I'll see the information gets to our ships. You know our government's asked for help from Cascadia.
And I know they won't release ships from here. They still fear that Cascadia may be the real target. But you've got the fleet coming from Moray.
Her expression changed as she said it. He felt the same. The combined fleet Kai had pushed for, organized, commanded. And now it was someone else's. And she was gone.
Hours behind Turek, at least. And no idea if any of the others will get here in time.
Rafe, I hope you...
make it? Me too. But I had better get back to juggling what few options we have.
When he broke the connection, he turned to Penny.
And how are you holding up? It's been a big help having you running interference.
It wasn't very nice of her.
About Kai? Her relative, Penny.
Still! Now that Kai's gone, there's no need to be insulting about you. And I don't think she's all that beautiful.
Penny, Stella didn't just know me some years back. She knew me. She even fancied herself in love with me.
Did you love her?
Stella? No. She was fun. Fun to talk to, fun to impress, fun to fool. I had her convinced I had bootstrapped my way up from the dregs of society. Not very nice, but we were both pretending to be not very nice people at the time. A pair of corporate spies. One slightly more experienced than the other. But love wasn't in it. When I saw she was beginning to slide that way, I pulled out.
And that's why she thinks you didn't love Kai.
Probably. Look, Penny, I'm sorry, but I really don't want to talk about any of that now. I have to go on. I have to do things. If I think about Kai and all that, I can't.
Penny nodded. Rafe left the office, checking with Emil for any messages. Stella had sent the data on Slaughter Key's ships. He routed that to Admiral Driscoll.
Master Sergeant, why are you suggesting we drop out of FTL at the next jump transit?
Orders from the Rector, Admiral. We need to make a contact. That will determine our destination.
My orders say Moscow Confederation.
With all due respect, the Admiral might want to review this data cube.
McRobert pulled it out and handed it over. The look Pajon gave him was not quite a glare, but very close. McRobert had been glared at many times before by people of higher rank than Pajon, and knew he presented the blank, impenetrable expression of experience. Pajon put the cube into a reader.
Is it going to self-destruct and destroy my reader as well?
Not at all. But the Rector wanted it hand-delivered after we entered FTL flight and before we arrived at this next jump transition.
Pajon read the text, mouth thinning as he read.
I'm not sure I like this, McRobert. I was specifically told more than once that I was to place myself under the command of Kai Vata, and Kai Vata only. Now,
in war, people die. She was certainly alive the last time the Rector spoke to her, shortly before we left Slaughter Key.
You're sure of that?
I saw her myself on the screen. Ansible contact, responsive conversation, and I know her. So I know for sure that was Kai Vata. If she's been killed before we get where we're going...
You know where that is, do you?
I know that making Ansible contact when we come out of jump will tell us. We have the code for her onboard Ansible and the codes for the Moscow Confederation and the Nexus governments.
And Stella Vata and the Mackenzie home planet. Though McRobert didn't think the Admiral needed to know that.
So, we could be diverted from Cascadia, go into a battle without these fancy new Ansibles?
That's right, Admiral.
That sounds really stupid to me.
It's usually best to think of the Rector's strategy as densely layered.
Pajon opened his mouth to answer, then closed it, then shook his head.
And you understand it all?
I don't try to understand it all.
It was better for them all if Pajon continued to see McRobert as the simple errand boy of a scheming old woman.
Fine. We'll all drop out at the next transition point and waste however much time it takes to retrieve a message. Does this transition jump even have a relay Ansible in the same system?
The onboard unit can access both onboard and system Ansible networks.
Though most of the ships in the fleet had none, Grace had insisted that the flagship have one, over Pajon's objections. Six hours later, the fleet dropped out of FTL space. McRobert, with Admiral Pajon glowering at his back, turned on the onboard Ansible and called Slaughter Key. As he expected, despite the local time there, Grace was at the console.
Admiral Pajan, McRobert, Kai's in FTL on the way to Nexus, following Turek's fleet. Estimates of his fleet size give over 300 ships. She anticipates an attack on Nexus fairly quickly after his down jump, which should be no sooner than 36 standard hours from now, relative time, but could of course be later. You will go to Nexus system. She will command all Allied forces. Nexus has formally requested Alliance aid and has the ID data for your ships.
Pajan glanced over at the displays.
I understand, but it will take us a minimum of 30 standard hours to reach the charted Nexus jump point. Not much margin.
Grace grinned at him. The wicked grin MacRobert knew so well.
Ah, but Turek doesn't know you're coming. We've told everyone you're going to Cascadia. Pure nepotism. The Rector sending Space Force to the aid of her niece just to protect Vata interests. There's a good bit of noise about it in the media just now.
Oh.
Your margin, Admiral Pajan, is his ignorance. Don't waste it.
You could have told me sooner, MacRobert.
I could, but of the two of you, I'd rather have you mad at me than her, even though you're closer.
With efficiency MacRobert admired, Pajan gave the series of orders that shifted the fleet into assault formations, and they were back in FTL flight within 2 hours.